Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. New Mexico is faced with a multi-million dollar budget crisis. According to financial watchdogs, the state needs to fund a $150 million shortfall in the budget year just completed and is on track to overspend by another $300 million in the current fiscal year. Worse, the state's $700 million reserve account is almost gone, making a special legislative session likely. Here to help explain the budget crisis and our underlying economy is Dr. Jeffrey Mitchell, director of UNM's Bureau of Economic Research. We couldn't have a better guest. Jeffrey Mitchell, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Happy for the opportunity.
Jeff, later in the show, I'd like to get into some of the details of both the budget and the economy. But I wonder if we could start with sort of what you might call an executive summary of both the budget and the economy, starting with the budget.
With the budget, we have resources come from – the revenues come from a number of sources, mainly gross receipts taxes. About a third of the budget comes from oil and gas, directly or indirectly. And personal income taxes add up another 20% or so. The budget in general is very closely tied then to the performance of the economy overall, and in particular oil and gas performance in the short term.
And what I understand is oil and gas revenues, state revenues from oil and gas production are way down.
They're way down. Oil prices have fallen from just over $100 a barrel to right now they're about 40, 41, but they were down to 26, and that has a direct impact on the state budget.
So one thing that's strange to me about that is that when you look at actual oil production is not that far down from 2014. It's the number of rigs and the number of employees associated with oil production that seems to be so way down.
There's a lag between the decline in prices or the rise in prices and the response of production, 6-12 months. But in the short term, it is a decline or a rise in the prices that has a significant impact because we are getting royalties off of the sales of that, right, of that oil and gas.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the higher the price, the more inducement there is for I'm displaying my college economics course. Mm-hmm. The more inducement there is for people to be in the business and produce oil, right?
Sure.
Yeah, right. And then how about a summary of where the economy stands, the New Mexico economy stands at this time?
Well, the New Mexico economy has not recovered as strongly as most other states in the country since 2010 or so. In fact, we're pretty close to the bottom, 48th, 49th in terms of job growth, which I think is a good, perhaps the best metric of economic growth. I think it's important to note that while New Mexico has long suffered with a lot of difficult social challenges, poverty, low literacy rates, et cetera, historically, we have grown during the 80s, 90s, up until the recession. We were top 10, 15 in terms of the rate of job growth. And so the very slow rate of growth since the recession is a break from the past and raises new and, I think, difficult questions. Right now, we started to do a little bit better in 2014, but the downturn in the oil market has had a very substantial impact on the economy. And it's most severe, of course, in those places, the southeastern corner of the state. Lee County, Eddy County, as well as San Juan County, where oil and gas is the main industry.
But it's sort of bottom line, the economy is slowly growing, or is it flat, or how would you describe it?
Well, very recently, I would say in the last year or so, we probably are about flat in terms of job growth. That's how we tend to look at the economy, the best metric for the performance of the economy, and I think one that most people care about. So I would say right now we're adding about as many jobs as we're losing.
So one thing that puzzles me about that is if the economy is basically flat, then what one would normally expect is for the budget to be flat. For, you know, if the budget were capturing the tax revenues from a flat economy, that seemingly the budget would be flat. But as we've said, the budget isn't flat. It's in the hole.
Well, again, when we talk about a flat economy, what we're saying is that we're not producing any more jobs than we're losing. But when you look at the state budget and the sources of revenues, as much as a third of those revenues come from oil and gas directly. And so if the price of oil falls by half, the amount of money that's coming into the state treasury falls, if not by half, a lot. And that is really hitting the economy.
So why isn't the breadth of the other part of the economy, like, for example, I think I read somewhere that Albuquerque was up like 2.4% or 2.6% year over year. So that's pretty good job growth, and that's the major population center. Mm-hmm. You would assume, or I would assume, being not an economist, that would be enough to kind of lift back up what we're losing in oil and gas, but the answer is obviously not.
No, it's not. I mean, the jobs do not necessarily and directly produce revenue for the state. A disproportionate amount of the revenues from the state come directly from royalties. It's essentially, think of it as the state owns some of that oil. When the state sells oil at a high price, they're getting a lot of money back. When the prices are low, they're not getting so much money back. And what we've seen, of course, is a very significant decline in one of the principal revenue sources to the state.
So, I mean, that gets you to the question, and you read this in the newspaper, over-reliance on oil and gas as a source for state revenues and as a source for the economy in general.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you can look at that two different ways. I don't think anybody or most people wouldn't want to have less revenues from oil and gas. The challenge is creating other more diverse sources of revenues. And that is a major challenge that New Mexico faces. And I think many of the problems that we face in terms of diversifying or broadening the tax base are very long term and they're very difficult to address. And we've not done a terribly good job, even during the times in which oil revenues were really high, in rebalancing the state revenue sources.
So when, you know, when I read articles about this, and it seems almost that some people anthropomorphize the economy, and they sort of say, well, you know, we're you know, like oil and gas is like a drug, or federal inflows are like a drug, and, you know, New Mexicans somehow are relying on federal inflows and oil and gas, and therefore we're not engaging in enough private enterprise, and if we can just get our mindset differently, our economy would grow. And that seems to me to misstate what an economy is, which is thousands of individual decisions. And, you know, the more money that's produced, it seems to me, in an economy, the better it is for that economy, no matter where it comes from.
Yes, there are thousands or 2 million people making decisions in New Mexico, but those 2 million people make those decisions under very specific conditions, and those conditions have a lot to do with public policy. Those public policy around tax policy, around education, around what we decide, where we decide to collect money and where we decide to spend money as a state. Those are the factors that at least condition the decisions that the 2 million people are making.
So I want to pick up on this tax policy issue that you've mentioned. But first, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just one moment. We are back on New Mexico, People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to have on the show, here in the studio, Dr. Jeffrey Mitchell. Jeff is the director of the UNM Bureau of Economic Research. And Jeff, one of the things I came across in terms of tax policy is like one of the big drivers, and I think this is a complete misimpression that people have, one of the big drivers of our economy over the last few years has been the Medicaid expansion. And it's been, at least in my mind, about $1 billion or so coming in. And so far, that amount that New Mexico has to make up, that 10% or 5%, that hasn't even kicked in yet. So it seems to me that the New Mexico decision to expand Medicaid has been overall a total positive for the economy. It hasn't been a negative.
Oh, to this point, I think it's absolutely a positive. The numbers show that we're bringing in somewhere in the area of about $1.5 to $2 billion extra a year.
You're kidding. That much?
That much. By itself, the extra flow of Medicaid dollars from the federal government to New Mexico accounts for an increase of about 2% in total, what we call total personal income. We're also covering nearly 200,000.
It's a social good, right?
A social good. Right. 1 in 10 people in the population are now covered who were not covered before. So it is absolutely a net positive to this point. The concern, it's a very real concern, is that over the next 3 or 4 years through 2020, the share of the total cost of the expansion of the program will begin to shift a bit to New Mexico. The state will, in each year, we will eventually become responsible for 10%.
Right, starting in 2020, I think.
Well, ending in 2020, beginning this year, actually. So it goes up.
No, but it's 10% in 2020.
Yes,
and,
that's correct.
Next year, fiscal year 17, or starting in January 17, it'll be 5%, right?
Yes.
And 5% of what, by the way?
5% of the total cost of the program. From purely economic point of view, one of the arguments one may make is that the revenues generated off of the initial $2 billion, in other words, the gross receipts taxes paid by various people in the society.
Yeah, they never add the credit side, right?
Right.
there's positives to the state treasury, right?
Right. So, yes, the state, some of that $2 billion is flowing to the state, and some of that money then in turn will go back to pay that 10%. But in general, it has a social good. We've seen most of the positive to this point. From a fiscal point of view, from the state's fiscal point of view, we've seen most of the positive. The concern is that it's over the next few years that we're going to start having to pay some of the costs.
All right. So the reason I brought up the Medicaid expansion is one of the things I saw when I happened to read an article about the Albuquerque economy, and it was growing. Mm-hmm. And I think the leading growth area was healthcare. But then when I looked at the gross receipts tax exemptions, it looks like there's an exemption for payments by managed care organizations and insurance companies to providers. So even though that area is picking up, say, in Albuquerque and presumably throughout the state, the gross receipts tax isn't getting the benefit of that from revenues because there's an exemption for that.
Yeah. Let me, if I can, back up and sort of paint a slightly larger picture and putting all of this in context. If we look at the state government, the state finances, let's think in generally in terms of there's three sources, three-thirds sources of revenue. One-third's oil and gas. One-third is gross receipts taxes, which is New Mexico's version, a complicated version of a sales tax. Another third, more or less, is income tax, corporate taxes, etc. The problem that we face is that the one-third oil and gas is highly volatile. It changes from year to year. The second third, gross receipts taxes, is subject to huge amounts of exemptions and deductions.
Yeah, there was more than 100 of them or something like that?
And more than 200, I believe.
Really?
And by our – we're currently doing some work on this, and by our best estimate at this point, it's quite preliminary, but Our estimate is that as much as 2/3 of the economy is basically off the table.
Only one, that's shocking.
Only 1/3 of the GDP, if you will, of the state is subject to taxes. The other 2/3 are subject to deductions, exemptions, et cetera. And so what we have then is a very narrow but deep tax base. It's very volatile. It requires that the rates be relatively high. If we had were able to broaden and get rid of some of those deductions and exemptions, we would have a much broader base with much lower rates.
So from a policy point of view, in terms of a steady revenue stream, that seems like obviously it should be broader, right?
I think there's very wide agreement on this, and this is some of the positive news. If you talk to legislators on both sides of the aisle, Republicans as well as Democrats, there seems to be a general consensus that we ought to be moving to broaden the tax base. By many accounts, the gross receipts tax system that we currently use is broken beyond repair. There's too many holes to fix at this point, and that some would argue we need to go back and basically scrap it and replace it.
Yeah, I picked out a few examples, like agricultural sales, they're exempt. Recreational vehicles, they're exempt. Tobacco wholesalers, they're exempt. Racetrack winnings, they're exempt. I mean, it's just like
virtually the entire manufacturing sector, much of – yeah. There's huge shares of it. And in each individual case, there may be good logic to the deduction. But when taken as a whole, you're narrowing your base to the point where we're unable to generate the kind of revenues necessary to pay for the services that the state demands.
So I want to get to the two big issues on tax policy that everyone talks about. And one is the Richardson tax cuts.
Yes.
And the other is the Martinez tax cuts. And I've seen numbers all over the place on what the state has lost by reason of these tax cuts.
Right.
The Richardson tax cuts were to personal income, correct?
That's correct.
And I think it went something like 8.6 to 5.9 or something like that. And the Martinez
the top rate, right.
Which is where you got more of the money, right? Right. From the top, right. And then the Martinez tax cuts were corporate tax cuts.
That's correct.
So do you have any kind of sense of how much more money New Mexico would be getting in any given period of time?
I haven't studied this closely, but the general sense is that the Richardson personal income tax cuts are costing us somewhere in the area of $250, $300 million a year, which is a considerable chunk of change. And the corporate tax base is considerably smaller, and so even if the shares are quite large, the impact of the cuts to the corporate income taxes is somewhat less. But note again,
I've heard like 50 million.
Yeah,
as a guess. So
exactly about 50
on the corporate
million
tax.
Right. So between them, we might be talking about $300 million. But now put that up again against what we're talking about when we look at oil and gas. The decline in oil and gas is costing us closer to $1 billion. It's very big dollars.
$1 billion a year.
Depending on how you look at it, yes.
Wow.
As much as $1 billion.
So a core question, and this is a core question even in the national debate, it's certainly a core question in New Mexico, is, you know, are we better off with, you know, would we have been better off and would we be better off instead of having these individual personal income tax cuts by the Democrats, mm-hmm. I should say, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or the corporate tax cuts mm-hmm. by the Republicans,
right.
Would the state be better off if instead the money was coming in and we were investing in basic things that a state needs to invest in order to grow the economy and make it a more attractive economy? But before you answer that, let me just say that this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to be at the table with Jeff Mitchell, who's the director of the Bureau of Economic Research. And go ahead, Jeff, where would we be better off? with the tax cuts. I mean, we sort of had a laboratory experiment. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say, like, all right, where are the jobs?
Right. I think a useful way of looking at this is in terms of the short-term and the long-term impacts. I'm not going to I want to put your question in context. Often when we're talking about the estate economy, and when we're talking about the state finances, what we're concerned with is what's happening now. What's going to be happening over the next 6 months, the next year? Are we going to be able to pay our bills? We constantly get caught up in that kind of conversation in terms of the immediate needs. But there are very long-term trends that the state faces. And I think at some point, you need to take a very serious look at where the state is investing and the direction the state's going. We're talking about challenges that are not a year or 2 years. We're talking about a generational change. Specifically, what we're looking at, if you look at the global economy and you look at the national economy, what we see clearly is that the places that are growing are places that have really invested in education and a lot of what we would call, economists call, human capital and innovation, your ability, the flexibility of the economy to adapt to new changes and the ability of the individuals to be highly productive. Those are products of very long-term investments. And these are investments that I think in many respects New Mexico has failed to make for decades perhaps. And in the long term, in my opinion, the only way we're going to really turn the New Mexico economy around is by addressing those, the capacity, the ability of the population to be able to meet its to be able to contribute productively to the state and global economy.
Yeah, I mean, my argument, and this feeds right into it, is that until we have an educated workforce, until we don't have one of the highest poverty rates in the country, you're not going to get cutting-edge businesses to come here because it's just not a cutting-edge place. And so if you want to make a difference, you need to start – and education's a tough nut to crack. Mm-hmm. But you need to start with early childhood. You need to start – if 80% of our kids are born – are Medicaid qualified, and they're, according to the LFC, when they start kindergarten, they're way behind the kids that are more advantaged – I mean, the only way to address that is to directly invest in these early childhood programs. And so far, we're just not doing it. And I think that, I mean, that's just one example. There's roads, there's bridges, there's airports, there's Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. There are all these things, and we don't have the money to do it.
Right.
It doesn't seem
like. And we're not alone, of course.
Right.
This is a national problem. I just want to make one comment on what you had just said.
Sure.
Without a better educated workforce, what have you, we're not going to be attractive to investors.
The inflow of capital.
I think right there is a question that we should be talking about. The model of economic development that New Mexico and really most other places in the country have been pursuing over the last several decades is attracting outside capital.
Stealing capital, really, basically. You try to buy someone to come in, right?
You're trying to recruit, what economists would call chasing smokestacks.
Okay,
trying to get Tesla to locate here.
Right.
When are we going to find the next Intel?
Right.
Well, what we clearly see in the last 10 years is that the places that are growing are not necessarily successful because they're effectively recruiting businesses to their place. They're creating businesses. Jobs are being created right now, typically by locally established businesses that grow from very small to larger and ultimately to very big. They tend to stick around. They tend to hire locally. They tend to reinvest in the community. And once established, they start creating a market for other types of businesses.
So if the economy is flat, I mean, why do these businesses that are located here now have much reason to invest capital in the, I mean, they're meeting the demand, presumably, approximately how it is.
Well, but the companies we really want to create are those that aren't just selling to New Mexicans, but are
right.
able to sell globally. I think a particular challenge that we have, and I think a good place to focus on economic development planning, is what happens when we're quite innovative. We're good at startups. We're good at creating the businesses that have 5, 10, 20 employees. The trick, the problem that we're having is once the company proves itself to be effective, can we retain it? Can we turn that business that has 25 people into a business that has 500 or 1,000 people?
I mean, one of the things I hear is the financing isn't there for these small businesses to grow here.
Right. Now we're talking about the businesses that have very high growth potential that may be leaving to go to San Diego or to go to Austin or go to San Francisco. It's a matter of financing. It's a matter of the depth and strength of the labor force. Sure, you can pull 25 people together who have great skills, but where are you going to get the next 475? Do you have the sort of the legal community, the marketing support, all of the other supporting industries that are necessary to turn a startup business of 25 people into 500? Those are the key to success in developing sort of rapidly growing innovative companies. And what's interesting is that 20 years ago, we thought, oh, geez, the internet, this means we can establish businesses anywhere. You can be in a shed in Montana and you're just as well off as anywhere else. What we've actually learned in the last 20 years or so is that high-tech companies are more concentrated than almost any other kind of industry. They're not
geographically
concentrated. They tend to succeed when they're clustered with others. And so in that sense, it's not terribly different than what we might have seen with the auto industry.
So why didn't Intel, why didn't Sandia, why didn't Los Alamos, how come they didn't, these obviously huge IT related businesses,
right.
How come they didn't cause this to happen?
Well, this is I think a very important and very difficult question. With respect to Intel, frankly, Intel was kind of a production facility. It's not a place.
It's a manufacturing.
It's a manufacturing. It's not where they're doing most of their innovation. It's not where their engineers are really focused to do the research and development. The problem with the national labs is another one. I mean, if you think about it, a national lab has a great deal of sort of keeping strong walls around its facility.
And figuratively.
Yeah, it trades in secrecy. And so the benefits of those labs don't necessarily spill out into the community.
Well, I'm sorry to say we're out of time. I would like to thank my guest, Dr. Jeffrey Mitchell, the director of UNM's Bureau of Economic Research. I would also like to thank my engineer today, Roman Garcia. The producer of this show is Jefferson White. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of this show are available at iTunes. Search Stephen Spitz. Archives of my past shows are at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.